Experimental performance artist, composer, and musician Laurie Anderson's new film, Heart of a Dog, will screen twice as part of Film Columbia this weekend and will begin a run at Time and Space Limited in Hudson, New York on November 6th. The film, like much of Anderson's work, doesn't translate well into a quick intro at the start of a radio segment. It's a meditation on life, perception, and stories. It talks about the loss of a much beloved pet and a less beloved parent.
What are days for? To wake us up? To put between the endless nights? What are nights for? To fall through time. Into another world.
Laurie Anderson joins us now. Laurie, welcome to the roundtable.
Thank you.
So there's a lot to talk about with the film, but I'll start with how did you figure out what stories you would include?
Well, it was pretty organic. It started with some dog stories and then expanded to a kind of idea of let's just collect a few stories about stories. So I did it over a kind of longer period of time than I usually do projects. It was really nice to work on it a little bit, almost sort of putter a bit, and then stop and then come back to it. And that's not my usual pattern, so I really enjoyed that. It gave me a chance to look at it really differently each time.
Do you think that process, the time that you took, will translate into future projects and you'll take more time and put things aside and bring them back from now on?
I'm not too good at translating work habits. You know, mm-hmm. I each thing seems to just have its own way of growing, and I never really learned how to do stuff. I try to learn as I go. So, you know, sometimes it's better just to impulsively plow through something, and it's like really a burst of ideas that just happen quickly. And so I wouldn't try to apply this kind of leisurely, loungy method to other things necessarily.
In one part of the film, you tell the listener, the viewer, about a meditation on feeling sad without being sad. And I know a lot of other coverage has picked up on that meditation, too, that you tell us about and asked you about it. And it felt to me like a lot of the stories in the film, and maybe the process of making the film, was kind of living that meditation, that you can feel sad about losing Lola Bell and explore that in the stories, but you don't let it take you over. Do you think that that's a fair estimation, a fair interpretation on my part, or doesn't it really matter to you?
No, totally is. I mean, this is I put it in the film because it's something I try to practice myself. And it is, to that extent, autobiographical. You know, I'm not kind of just saying things that I don't really care about, but it's also not really like a portrait of me. It's, mm-hmm. it's not about a film that's about, like, getting to know me like a biography might be. Like, what were you like as a kid? What are your motivations? In the very beginning, I try to say pretty clearly that it's about how you create your own stories, starting with the dream that I have had of engineering the birth of my dog. It's a really weird story about being in a hospital and the doctor comes in and says, it's a girl, and I'm really happy, and it actually is hands me a bundle that is wrapped in this little bundle is my dog, actually. And no one in the hospital room says, hey, actually, this is a dog, not a person. it's just a very eerie dream, the way most dreams are. But the point of telling that dream was really that I felt very guilty about having made all the arrangements to do this operation. You know, that it wasn't just happening out of the blue for no reason. And what I was trying to say is, you know, when you have a dream of, I was lost in a lonely valley and it was very dark, and, you know, I just think, you know, remember who designed that lonely valley. And who made the mountain so steep and made you a little lost person, it's yourself as the writer. So it's really about how you construct reality through words, and your life through words, and you know how you dream up who you are.
And you, as an artist of renown, have to talk about who you are a lot, and people look to your art and ask you to tell them, like people like me, I mean, ask you to tell us what you mean and who you are based on what you've created.
Yeah, and that's a sort of shorthand, too. It's not the complete shorthand of somebody saying, what kind of kid were you? And you have one or two stories that you haul out about, oh, I was shy, I was a punk, and those aren't really explaining, you know, who you are, but they're shorthand for it. And I'm not really trying to explain to other people who I am either. I mean, I'm an artist working on things, but I don't really care that people know me particularly. You know, I hope that they're interested in things that I'm interested in, and that's not really just painting a portrait of myself for people to look at. It's instead saying, you know, how do you remember? How do you forget? How do you use your stories to create your own identity? This film is filled with questions. It's about where you're going and who you are, and it's really addressed to the person who's watching it. I'm using my own life as little kind of ways to look at those things, but really it's about the questions themselves and not about a get to know me kind of thing.
Right. You use your own life because that is the one that you have to use.
That's the one I know.
Right.
You know? I know that one the best. And so it's like to talk about childhood in general is a little bit odd. So I talk about it in general, but also through my own experience as a child.
And that's what I think is the creepiest thing about stories. You try to get to the point you're making, usually about yourself or something you learned. And you get your story, and you hold on to it. And every time you tell it, you forget it. More.
During the process of making the movie, one of your brothers gave you a bunch of home movies. What did those movies give you as you worked and help you with or lend to you to make the film?
They gave me an end to the movie because I was sort of struggling with some questions about love and loyalty. And so these films actually were films, 8mm films from my childhood, which was many decades ago, and they were all melted and, you know, cut up and sort of like smashed and stretched, and they were so beautiful. You know, you take out some of these old things and they're just instant, you know, Bruegel paintings or something. You know, they're all very, very painterly, very beautiful. And I thought, whoa, here's this lost, wintry world of my childhood. It's seen through the filter of film, so, and old film, so it becomes very romantic and half-remembered. So, however, you know, there was imagery of my mother at the lake that we lived next to in winter where we skated, an island where something happened when I was 8, and in which I almost drowned my brothers, and so when their stroller fell through the ice. It was a series of little short 8mm clips that reminded me of that day. And I called my brothers and said, guys, do you remember when I almost drowned you? And they said, yes, we do. I mean, and also when you're an identical twin, you have like an outboard brain, you know, you have another person who reminds you of things. So they did remember that pretty well. And so they said, you're not going to put that in the film, are you? And I said, well, yeah, do you mind? So I did. I put it in. Mm-hmm. And it was, it answered a question that I'd been asking throughout the film in various ways about what love is. And I'll leave it to your listeners to become viewers of the film to find the answer to that story.
And it has to do, of course, with your mother. Would you have made this film if your mother were still alive?
you know, I talked to my brothers about that, and I said, you know, I'm saying some things about Mom that, you know, might, I don't know, do you think, what do you think she would have thought? They said, she would have loved this film, you know. She was like, she was a very, very proud and very formal person. She wasn't someone who liked to talk about love or even, you know, it made her very uncomfortable. It really did. She is a person who had 8 kids, but she was not, let's say, a cuddler, if you want to put it some certain ways. I really admired her very much, and she was really inspiring. She was a very brilliant woman. So often with something like that, when you have a parent like that, it's kind of complicated. And if they're not a person who's warm, as she was not, as a child, you see the world in a different way. And also, that's what I think, why I think you have two parents, you know. you get a couple cracks at this, you know. Maybe the other one will be warm. And in my case, I was very lucky, and I had a father who was very, very warm. He's in the film, but not really visible. You know, he's, and I was thinking, like, why are all my brothers and sisters, all 7 of them in there, and my mother and dogs and cats and horses and skaters? And then I thought, because he's where all the dads are. He's taking the he's taking the movies. He's the DP. So you see all of these things through his eyes. So that's where he is in this picture.
Our guest is Laurie Anderson. Her new film, Heart of a Dog, will screen twice at Film Columbia this weekend. FilmColumbia.org for more information. I'm in Albany, New York. Albany is very near Troy, where MPAC is, and you were an artist in residence at MPAC for 5 years. Late last year, you screened a film there that was partially produced while you were in residence there, and the presentation of that film was identified as New Film, A Personal Essay. Was that film a version of The Heart of a Dog?
Yes, that was Heart of a Dog, which was untitled at that point. And I learned so much from that screening, and also so much from being an artist in residence at MPAC. It was a really wonderful experience for me. It was just really fantastic. And what people said at that screening was, you know, they looked at it and there was no music, and they said, please, do not put music in this film. It's so hardcore like this, just a voice. And I'll always remember this screening because I was like, I really did agree with them. And so I decided not to put any music on. Now, my co-producer, Dan Janvey, was saying, like, so what about the music? And I said, well, I was thinking, like, none. And he was sort of, like, speechless. And then I thought, well, wait a second. I am a musician. I mean, maybe I should try. And I can always throw it away. You know, you don't have to, like, use it just because you did it. So I did try it, and then I thought, well, I like it. I like it. It's giving it a different flavor, very different flavor. Maybe I'll do a version someday with just the voiceover, because it really is. I remember how stark it was, you know, and people really kind of got that. I hope they're not too disappointed, the people in that audience, to hear it with music. But go and hear it, give it a try, you know, just see what you think.
Was it otherwise the same or fairly similar?
No, I mean, I tinkered with it. I took things in and out. It was roughly that. I was also doing a lot of processing of things and filters and stuff, so it was probably some of the things were works in progress, but basically it looked like it was looking.
The soundtrack of the film is coming out on Nonesuch, and apart from how it won't have the visual component, how does a soundtrack for a film like this work? Is it all of the narration, or is it just music from the music that you created?
It's the whole film. Yeah, it's just exactly what you'd hear if you closed your eyes.
And how did you decide to put it out that way?
I wasn't going to put out a record. But I was mastering the soundtrack, and people in the film world don't do that. They don't master the audio. And I said, well, why not? You know, don't you want us to sound really good? And they said, hey, we do that in the film mix. I was like, I'm going to master this. I'm sorry. I'm from the record world, and I'm going to just go and chisel away with those sharp little mastering tools and a great mastering engineer. And we just, you know, you carve at things so that you make the vocals stand out from the music, and you get all the T's and S's in, and it's not blurry, it's sharp, you know. So we did that. And the mastering engineer of the stereo mix, because we also did the next day a 5.1 theater mix, but the mastering engineer of the stereo mix said at the end of the session, "I love your new record." And I said, "Record? It's not a record. It's a movie." I guess I've somehow forgotten to mention that, you know, because we weren't doing anything different than a record in the stereo mix, you know, absolutely nothing. In the 5.1, obviously, you're trying to make surround sound, so it's different. But I was showing it to some people, and some of them were from the record company. They said, "Let's do a soundtrack." I was like, "Okay, that's, why not?" Because it really is a kind of radio play, or can be, mm-hmm. you know. And on the other hand, I made it as a film because so much of the images tell you a whole different part of the story. You know, they can make something feel completely different than you do when you just hear it. But also, it has a lot to do with a radio play, in that many of the things that are being described aren't being shown. So, for example, there's a long section about a guy who lived in the trees and worked on the phone lines, and he was not a employee of the phone company.
I love that story.
Yeah, he just liked to live up there. And now you don't ever see this guy or any kind of, like, anything about it. You see a whole bunch of telephone poles just going by, and wires and branches, and it's all up to you how you imagine this or how you use your mind to make it. So I think it's a kind of they're two different things, the record and the movie.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, kind of radically different. You know, you think it's exactly the same sound, but your mind works really differently in each one.
Laurie Anderson's Heart of a Dog will screen as part of Film Columbia twice, Saturday, October 24th at 8:30 at the Hudson Lodge in Hudson, New York, and Sunday, October 25th at 7 p.m. at the Crandall Theater in Chatham, New York. To learn more, visit filmcolumbia.org. The film will also be at Time and Space Limited in Hudson, New York, beginning on November 6th. To keep track of that, visit timeandspace.org. Laurie Anderson, thank you so much for your time. It's been wonderful to speak with you today.
You're so welcome. Me too. Thanks.
Once again, Heart of a Dog will screen twice at Film Columbia this weekend. The film is by Laurie Anderson. FilmColumbia.org for more information. The soundtrack is available on Nonesuch Records today. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.
You were there, dressed as a cat. Two French girls with Mexican hats. Never knew you could dance like that. Smoke was whirling, and he was shocked, and that was when the fire.